Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome, everyone, and welcome to Westside Visions on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Brother Bullock, and I will be joined by my co-host, Sister Eileen Reed. Sister Reed, are you there?
I am here, Brother Bullock, and good evening to you as well.
Yes, indeed. Hope that you had a good day today and got some things taken care of.
Yes, it's been a long day, but I'm ready to continue our discussion about First Ladies in celebration of Women's History Month.
Yes, indeed. And thanks to Weather Interrupt This to the night, we pick back up with the second part of our First Ladies of the United States of America. And at the time, I was speaking about Lady Bird Johnson, who was first lady of the White House in 1963, having taken over for Mrs. Kennedy after the assassination of President Kennedy. And I'd like to pick up where I left off with Lady Bird.
Right.
All right, so I'm going to pick up to her going on the campaign trail for President Johnson during right after President Kennedy to assassination. She decided that she was going to travel through 8 southern states from October 6th through 9th on a charter train that they named the Lady Bird Special. And at one point, she gave 45 speeches in 4 days. And this was the first time that a first lady had did what's known as a solo whistle stop for campaign purposes. Usually they go out, the president would be with them, but she decided she was going to do this, her and some of her confidants, some of the people who worked in the East Wing with her. And she also took her 2 daughters with her. And she wanted to do this tour in attempt to win back the disaffected Southern Democrats who felt like they had been let down because of the passage of civil rights. And as you know, at that point, we had Democrats and what was known as Dixiecrats, who eventually
right.
became Republicans. Yeah. So and now, you know, felt like weren't real happy with her because, again, they felt like the Johnsons being Southerners, they had turned their back on Southern traditions, and you know what that stood for.
Mm-hmm.
So during her first stop, while speaking in a small town, the first thing she heard was being called Blackbird Johnson and being told to go back home, go back to the White House and remember you're white.
Hmm.
But she didn't stoop to their level. She didn't let it deter her. Instead, she traveled 1,700 miles, taking forth her message and the presidents for the country. You know, she didn't bait the people she spoke with. She didn't fuss with them. She didn't even, you know, rise to the level. She spoke from their heart. When she got to New Orleans, she told the crowd she was aware of those who would exploit the South's past troubles, but she didn't believe that the majority of the South wanted any part of the old business. And believe it or not, President Johnson got elected in a landslide, and he carried 3 Southern states, North Carolina, Florida, and Virginia, which he said surprised him that he carried the state of Virginia.
Yes, that would be a surprise.
Now, moving forward, in 1968, Lady Bird hosted a series of luncheons that she called the Women Doer Luncheons. And the first one they had was titled, What Citizens Can Do to Ensure Safety in the Streets. One of her speakers was Eartha Kitt. And when Eartha Kitt's time came to speak after being ignored and overlooked several times, you know, the speech she gave didn't align with the speeches that was given before her, and she spoke her truth. And she told the First Lady, she said, you know, I've lived in the gutters, and I know the youth of America today are not rebelling and becoming hippies for no reason at all. They are rebelling against something. Many mothers feel that they are going to raise their sons and the president will send them off to war in Vietnam. She then told Mrs. Johnson, I'm sorry if this offends you and the president, but you're sending the best of this country to be shot in Maine. No wonder these kids rebel and smoke. And if you don't know what that is, that's marijuana.
Gosh.
Of course, Lady Bird was offended. She teared up and she addressed Kitt directly and told her, well, yes, there is a war on and I pray for an honorable peace, but that doesn't mean we get a free ticket to not try and work at bettering things in our country. And I'm sorry I can't understand as much as I should because I didn't live in the background you lived in, you know. And as you know, Mrs. Johnson did come from money. You know, her family was wealthy. The president, having been alerted to what was going on, entered the luncheon. And, of course, he addressed Eartha Kitt, whose acting and singing career suddenly took a nosedive after that encounter with the First Lady.
Correct.
And as you know, over the years, Eartha Kitt pretty much was blacklisted and banned by a lot of the entertainment committee. Although you would see her from time to time in certain things, but she didn't get the roles that she used to get and the appearances that she used to get before that encounter with Mrs. Johnson.
Agreed.
Which, you know, makes you wonder, when we talk about America, even today, it still seems to be that one rule for black and brown America and another rule for white America. And sooner or later, we're going to have to come to that universal understanding where one rule applies to all.
That'll be a great day if that ever happens.
Yes, indeed. So, Sister Reed, did you have anything else that you wanted to go over?
For Lady Bird, no, but I'm going to be covering another First Lady. So did you have anything that you wanted to add about Mrs. Johnson?
No. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, the last First Lady that I'm going to be talking about in this discussion for Women's History Month is Hillary Rodham Clinton. And Hillary is an interesting figure because she sort of straddles and expands a little bit the role of the First Lady. First of all, it's interesting where she got her start. She was born into a conservative family. And she was born, let me see if I got my facts right. She was born in 1947. In Park Ridge, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. She graduated from Wesley college in 1969, and she earned her JD from her Juris Doctorate law degree from Yale Law School in 1973. She married Bill Clinton in 1975, the two having met at Yale. And in 1977, she was the co-founder of the Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. She was appointed the first female chair of the Legal Services Corporation in 1978. And became the first female law partner at one of Little Rock's most prestigious law firms, Rose Law Firm. You know, it's interesting because Hillary was raised, and in her early life, she was what you call a Rockefeller Republican. But after dealing with the history of Vietnam and civil rights interactions, she decided to convert, and she became more liberal and ultimately became a Democrat. It's interesting because her husband, Bill Clinton's infidelities and issues like Whitewater caused a lot of difficulties in her marriage, but she remained married to Bill. And they raised their daughter, Chelsea, together. Clinton was actually the first lady of Arkansas twice, not consecutively. She was the first lady of Arkansas from 79 to 81. And then her husband lost the next election. And then she was the first lady of Arkansas from 83 to 92. And while Bill Clinton was governor, he appointed her to chair the Rural Health Advisory Committee in Arkansas. And this was like the first time that he put her in charge of a very important position politically. And this was sort of a problem for a lot of their political rivals. She served as the First Lady of the U.S. from 93 to 2001. And she actually had an office in the West Wing, which was a first. She assisted in vetting top-level positions in the White House and dozens at the lower level. And after Eleanor Roosevelt, Clinton was regarded as one of the most empowered presidential wives in American history. Now, healthcare was a major issue during her tenure as First Lady. And she actually chaired, her husband put her in charge of chairing the task force on national health care reform. Now, the bill that was put together during that time lost in a democratically controlled House and Senate. And it's unfortunate that it happened. But we can see that Hillary's political life did not end there. She was a senator for the state of New York after that. And during President Obama's tenure, she served as Secretary of State. So we can see that arguably Hillary Clinton is one of the most polarizing political figures in the 20th century, and she has run for president twice. Some people are saying that she might be thinking about running in 2024, but we have yet to hear any announcements about that. So,
right.
Yeah. So she's a very polarizing figure in American politics. Love her or they hate her.
Yes, she is. And even as a woman politician, she has stood out among many with her approach and the way she come at things. Now, going back to that bill that you were talking about, where it was a democratically controlled Senate, but they lost. Do you think that was because of infighting with the Democrats at that particular time?
Actually, I do. A lot of the males in the Democratic Party, especially the old guard males, thought that Hillary had way too much power and too much influence on the president, and they weren't taking into regard or effect that Hillary had a very good political mind on her own. But because of so much controversy that went on during the Clinton administration, she took a lot of political hits that her husband somehow was able to avoid. So, yeah, I think that was part of the problem. Yes.
You know, it's funny you say that a lot of people felt she held too much power over the president, because I'm thinking back about Eleanor Roosevelt, and, you know, they said the same thing about her also.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So she Eleanor was the prototype for Hillary, really.
Yes, she was. She really was. And it's funny that those particular women, and there's another one who's going to have the same issue. I'm going to bring her up a little later on. And it's funny that because they spoke out on their own and brought their own voice out to the forefront and talked about things they felt was important,
exactly.
Somehow that meant that they were somehow controlling the president.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because the person that you're talking about, the same as Hillary, in their careers as lawyers, made more money than their husbands and held more prestigious, you know, legal positions than their husbands did. And I just find that fascinating.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the job of First Lady is often a thankless position, but the First Ladies that we have showcased sort of shown that, you know, these women were intelligent, smart, resourceful in their own right and should be given credit for that.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, to think if we were kind of based – if our government was kind of based more like it is in Great Britain, in Germany, I really could see one of these women holding that seat of power.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like Margaret Thatcher. And, yeah, I could see a woman holding that seat of power here like that, because we've had several, not only first ladies, but women in the Senate that could have held it down.
Absolutely. I mean, there's talk about talking about senators that Elizabeth Warren might be running for president, and she might be riding a wave because, remember, she was talking about the Dodd-Frank bank bill, a bank issue regulations back in 2018, and those weren't strengthened. They were destroyed by number 45. And
yes,
so
they
people see the wisdom of Eleanor Warren. So, of Elizabeth Warren. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And interesting that you should bring up Great Britain and Germany, because people need to remember that Margaret Thatcher was a staunch conservative when she served as prime minister, and Angela Merkel of Germany is quite a bit more liberal than Thatcher ever was.
Right.
So these are two women with two very different political views that ran an entire country. So it's possible.
Yeah.
I don't
know
if I live
it's entirely possible.
Yeah.
And with Elizabeth Warren thinking about running, it is quite possible, but Elizabeth also is going to have a lot of fence mending to do, because listening to some people she really didn't need to She made the mistake of attacking Maxine Waters, which I can tell you now is a no-no.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a no-no.
And her the people who support her are you know, staunch with supporters. So that is
going to be hard. In fact, Katie Holmes, Katie Porter, found out the hard way. You don't mess with Amy Maxine.
Yeah.
And as you know, she barely squeaked by in her election because of something stupid she did.
Well, you know, she got taken to task. I mean, and it was a public spanking. So we'll see how her political career fares in future after that.
Exactly.
You know, and
that appears to be one of the problems with the Democratic Party. Even though we always claim we have an umbrella for all, it always seems like once they get there, certain ones start to believe their own press. Oh, well, I got elected, so I must be bigger than what I think I am. And instead of working together, now we all want to pull in a different direction, when right now unity is what we need to combat a lot of the silliness that is going on.
Well, that's the problem with the Democrats' big tent approach to politics. You have too many people pulling in too many different directions. And you know, it's difficult. Now, I'm not saying that Democrats need to be in lockstep with each other like Republicans, because we can see where that got them. But there needs to be a little bit more unity and a lot less infighting. So we'll see how that works out, because we are at a crossroads politically in this country. And for those of us who are keeping their eyes on the far right, I can tell you that with the reversal of Roe v. Wade and all of these anti-liberal states and governors like DeSantis and Abbott in Texas, we are in for some very, very rough times here for a lot of people in this country. So I'm hoping that the Democrats can pull it together. And it's hard for me to see Biden doing a second term. I can't see that. Maybe it's in the works for him, but I can't see it. But we need a strong candidate coming out for the next presidential.
Yeah. We do, and I say it's hard, not because I don't think he can do it mentally. I think it's an age thing. With me, it's an age thing, and I've always felt that way. I've always felt like when politicians reach a certain age, they really do need to step to the side and let younger people come in. I think back to Jesse Helms, who was a Republican, but died in office. He had to be in his late 90s.
Yeah, he was.
And
he was. He was a political dinosaur that should have made way for somebody younger.
Yes, exactly, because that's how we improve. I mean, we can't stay there forever holding on to the old ways. You got to bring in that new voice, that new sound, that new thinking, you know, so to be up on time so we can know, you know, how to move forward.
Exactly. I agree. And you know, I don't really have a problem with Biden philosophically, but I do understand that he, too, is from the Democratic old guard, and I remember him very well when, you know, Anita Hill was going through what she had to go through, you know, on Capitol Hill, and that is not flattering for Biden, not at all.
No, it's not, but I have to give him credit because he did admit to the error of his ways, and you know, he did a lot more than many of them do. Many of them will make certain statements and hang on to them till death do they part. But he came forward and said, I screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And not many Republicans will do that.
No.
So
I had
to give him credit for that.
But I'm just saying that in the same vein that you were talking about Jesse Helms, you know, aging out of that, you know, political gig,
yeah.
I feel the same way about Biden. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying. Exactly. Like I was saying, when you reach a certain age, you need to step to the side and let those younger folks come in. You know, everybody was on this kick about Dianne Feinstein. Well, I'm glad that Dianne finally said, you know what? I am going to go sit down.
Yes, she needed to.
And I know that I know it wasn't easy for her. It was hard. But she finally came to the decision and said, okay, enough is enough. I'm going to step to the side.
Right. Right. So it's going to be an interesting road ahead in politics in America, because so much of you know, democratic and social justice foundations have been undone. And it's unfortunate that it's come to this, but those of us who talk about these things saw it coming, and those people who say, oh, it doesn't matter whether or not we go vote, they need to stop being armchair critics and get out there and register to vote and fight for a better
America. Exactly. I agree with you 100%. You know, I rarely go to Facebook, but I made a post today, and because I had read an article where,
yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, where your friend in Florida was making
that,
a speech.
That.
He was making a speech in Florida, and they have gone back into the history books there to right what he called a wrong, that the Rosa Parks story of how she was removed from the bus she was on and her sitting down was not true. It wasn't as hard as some people think it was. It really was softer than that. The bus driver realized that she was tired and, you know, knew that this poor woman had worked so hard. She couldn't make it all the way to the back of the bus. So he told her to sit down, but because of the way things were, when the police arrived, he had to go along with the story, mm-hmm. but he went to check on her at the jail to make sure she was okay.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
You know, that revision is a lie. That revision is a lie, because those of us who know our Black history know that it was already planned out what Rosa was going to do. It wasn't even about her being tired or anything like that. The framers of this demonstration, so to speak, had already planned it out. They knew what was going to happen.
Exactly.
So, wow.
These revisionist attacks on Black history and the whitewashing of it in Florida, in Texas, in Mississippi, in Arkansas, the attack on transgender rights, the attack on gay rights, the attack on Black women, Latino women, the attack on Black women's hair. It is reaching a point to where America is not going to be happy until they really reach that point where they can no longer turn back to what's right.
Well, you know what's going to happen then? It's going to be chaos.
It'll be chaos. And, you know, I always have people say, well, you know, they're doing this. Well, I'm going to say again, and I'm like you with this, people need to get out and vote, because they can't get elected if you don't vote for them.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is what always gets me. People always want to talk about how someone like DeSantis got into office. Well, apparently, y'all voted him in.
Mm-hmm. Or by not voting, allow the people who did vote to vote him in.
Exactly. You know, like you say, stop being an armchair critic, get registered, and get out there and get into the fight.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, in many cases, you don't even have to leave your house to register to vote. I mean,
no.
You know, some states have motor voter, and, you know, they make it so easy to do. So there's really no excuse for it. And I just think that it's a shame, a sin and a shame that people don't do it. So many people have given up their lives for black folks, especially, and other people of color to have the right to vote, for us not to do it. But and I understand that when you are working hard and you're raising your family, and, you know, your first priority is not voting, that is keeping food on the table and a roof over your head and food on the table. I understand all that. But if we're going to have a democracy, voting is a major building block and a foundation for that. So we can't have it. We can't have it both ways. We just have to do our part as citizens. And this is one of the reasons why that civics and government needs to be taught in school, so younger people coming up behind us can understand. But I do think, you know, with social media, young people get it. They understand that they have to be involved. They get it.
You are absolutely correct with that. And, you know, a little information goes a long way. I've said it time and time again, even with the little show that we do. That's like today. Went back over on Facebook, posted that link. All you got to do is click on it. It takes you right to where you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to media, it makes it so easy now that you don't have to be a rocket scientist to follow along to something.
True.
So, you know, I just have to believe people got to do better and start caring about what's in front of them before they reach that point to where they're not going to be able to care. And then when they do start caring, it's not going to make a difference.
No, it'll be too late. And the sad
it'll
part about
late.
It is that the people who are going to suffer the most are going to be the children and the elders, the senior citizens, who are going
exactly.
to be most vulnerable. And that's
exactly.
That's
all right. So, Sister Reed, you got somebody else over there?
I'm sorry? Say again.
Do you have anybody else over there?
No. No, I'm good.
Well, I'll tell you what then. I'll pick up where we stopped off.
Okay.
There's a thing about being a first. And being a first sometimes mean you're number one. Sometimes means someone never did it before you or someone did it before you. But when you came along, you were unique. And that's where we're at now. So coming to you now will be our 44th First Lady, Michelle Obama, who was First Lady from 2009, well, actually 2008 till 2016-17. And she was born in Chicago, January 17th, 1964. And she was a graduate of Princeton University and the Harvard Law School.
Ooh.
American woman, to our knowledge, to serve as First Lady.
Mm-hmm.
Raised on the South Side of Chicago, she met her husband, President Barack Obama, while working at the law firm Fidley and Austin. Now, she had also worked at several nonprofits She also was the Associate Dean of Student Services at the University of Chicago and Vice President for Community and External Affairs for the University of Chicago Medical Center. 1992, her and President Obama were married, and they had two daughters to that union. Now, when Barack Obama was running for president, she campaigned for him throughout 2007 and 8 and delivered a fiery keynote address at the Democratic. And trust me, it was a big deal.
Yes, I agree.
And she definitely got a standing ovation. Now, one of the things I've always been impressed about Mrs. Obama was that she can actually trace her family roots on both sides of her family. And on her father's side, she's descended from her parental great-great-grandfather, Jim Robinson, was born into slavery in 1850 in the Friendfield Plantation near Georgetown, South Carolina. He became a freedman after the war at age 15, and reside in the Georgetown area. When it comes to her maternal ancestors, her great-great-great-grandmother, who was Melvina Dorsey Shields, was born in South Carolina in slavery and sold to Henry Walker Shields in Clayton, Georgia. That lineage traces all the way back to the Robinson family, to which Michelle Obama came from. Now, like most Black Americans, you know, our lineage, just like Michelle's and her lineage, consists of Irish, English, and Native American roots. And I don't know if you heard of him, but one of her contemporary extended family members is Rabbi Capers Funny, who was born in Georgetown, South Carolina. He's the son of her grandfather's sister and husband, and he's 12 years older than Michelle, and he's right there.
Wow.
There's stories about him, and they've gotten together, and it's hilarious.
Fascinating.
But, you know, Michelle Obama's road to the White House East Wing was far from an easy one, because from the moment, unlike other first ladies, she's had different barriers. From the moment that she became first lady, the first thing you heard about her was she was an angry Black woman, and that was spoken by on Fox News, and many websites attempted.
Well, yeah, she's the vision of all Black women. We're either angry or we're one of the archetype Black women. We're either a Jezebel or we're a mammy, or, you know, it's something like that. We keep hearing these same political tropes all the time about
yes,
it.
Yes, 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 you are absolutely correct. And they definitely tried to go that route with Michelle Obama. That she was controlling, she was selfish, she was the angry Black woman that if she couldn't get her way, she would run roughshod over people. And, you know, I have to be honest, from the times that I've seen her before be firm, but I've never seen her try to trample over anyone.
No, and remember, she's the one that coined the phrase, when they go low, we go high.
Exactly. Now, and if you watched, I know you remember this, when Barack Obama received the Democratic nomination, him and his wife fist bumped each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, Fox News, and they had a Black reporter at the time, who jumped on Fox News saying that was a terroristic fist bump. They're planning the ruination of America. Well,
right. Wasn't it right after that that was it the New Yorker? It was some big publication that had him in like Muslim garb and had her with a rifle over her shoulder, this cartoon. It was just very, very derogatory.
Yes, it was. And I believe it was the New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not only would they attack that, but they also would attack the way she would dress sometimes. You know, she didn't get the same, you know, she didn't get the same treatment coming out the gate as different first ladies. And
The racism was palatable. It really was.
Exactly. But, you know, she stated that, you know, one of the things that she and the president had learned while being in politics was that they had to put on their armor, and stated that it would always be criticism, but they must take it in stride and know that it comes with the territory.
Absolutely. One of the things that I most respected about Michelle during her tenure as First Lady is that she brought her mother to live with them at the White House to help with their children.
Yes.
And this is very, very important from a cultural standpoint, because I don't believe any other First Lady did that particular gesture. And it was not, people need to understand that that culturally, that was not because they lacked servants or staff. That was because he wanted to insulate her daughters from all the incoming racism, all the incoming slings and arrows. And I think she did a fine job by having Mrs. Robinson there.
Exactly. And you just spoke something that, you know, you and I know it happens. I grew up with my grandmother in the house, and it wasn't because my grandmother couldn't take care of herself or wasn't capable of living on her own, but just like you said, it was to insulate us against certain issues.
Exactly.
There were things we learned from my grandmother that we didn't learn from my mom.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because my grandmother had fought certain battles, and she knew how to deal with them.
Exactly.
And yes, and that's what went on with Barack and Michelle bringing Mrs. Robinson to the White House. That, you know, those young ladies got to see their grandmother on a daily basis and learn from her.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Which is very important.
It is. It is. And I'm sure that it helped Sasha and Malia a great deal to see that, because nobody is going to wrap you up like grandma is going to do. And not only that, but I'm sure her counsel helped Michelle as well to weather the things that she had to go through. So
exactly.
They did what black women and black girls have been doing for centuries, and that is to survive with grace.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Now, during her time in office, Michelle Obama often visited homeless shelters, soup kitchens. She sent representatives to schools and advocated for public service. As you know, she started a vegetable garden there at the White House.
She did. She did. And she also emphasized exercising on a regular basis, eating healthy. Yes, she did. And that's very important for all people.
Yes, indeed. And that's the kind of person she was. She hosted a White House reception for Women's Rights Act advocates in celebration of the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Payment Act of 2009, mm-hmm. which was the pay equity law.
That's right.
And, you know, I remember this being brought up on Fox, like, well, you know, she kind of forced the president and the Senate to put that bill in motion. No, she didn't force anybody. There were a lot of female senators who, I must honestly say, spoke up stepped up and spoke out on that bill like they were supposed to.
Yes. Yes, they did. And it was a hard fought ordeal for them to do that.
It really was. That bill was a major fight.
Mm-hmm.
Not only from the Republican side, but also from the Democratic side. Because like you said, you had a lot of those staunch, old school male Democrats who didn't want to see change.
Exactly.
Well, it's always been like this. Why should we, you know, why you feel like you got to, no, it's time to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. No, Michelle Obama is definitely a class act, smart, classy, inclusive. I mean, there are not enough adjectives for me to attach.
No, it is not. She also had several initiatives she worked on. The List Move, her List Move initiative, which was getting young people exercising,
mm-hmm.
not just sitting around, not just being stuck on a phone, not just being stuck on a video game, but, you know, getting out and moving about and exercising your body.
Exactly.
She had the Reach Higher movement, which, again, went right along with her Lit Girls Learn movement, which was all about educating young women worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, was a very big deal because, as you know, in some parts of the world, the Middle East, some of the African countries, young women are not supposed to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to herd sheep or cows or be homemakers, and that's that. Where Mrs. Obama was staunchly pushing education.
Yes, she did.
She also had an initiative called Joining Forces, putting different agencies together to work with one another. And she also advocated for women, families, and she promoted the arts and definitely believed in national service. Joining
mm-hmm.
things like the Peace Corps and the, what was the new one they came up with? It wasn't the Youth Conservation Corps anymore. But
AmeriCorps?
Yeah, AmeriCorps. You know, to give back to the country. And that just makes sense.
Absolutely. You know, and it's interesting that, you know, nobody ever has said about the Obamas that they're anti-military or anti-veterans or anything like that. And I think that's important to point out because I'm sure if they could have said it about them, they would have said it about them. But you never heard anything like that. I'm sure that Mrs. Obama and Mrs. Biden, who was second lady at the time, attended plenty of VA and veterans events during their tenures. So
yes, they did. Yes, they did. Now, one of Michelle's biggest critics was a lady by the name of Michelle Cotto, who called the first lady a feminist nightmare for not using her position and education to advocate for women's issues.
Lord, have mercy.
Did you hear what I just said?
Yes. Yes, I did hear it. I mean, Michelle Obama had so much coming at her. She was criticized for wearing, you know, a top where her shoulders were being shown. I mean, the woman was toned and in shape. And they had a problem with that. There was somebody, and I can't remember who, I probably blocked it out on person, that tried to call Mrs. Obama a monkey or a chimp in heels.
And
I really personally got offended by that because I'm like, really? Really? Oh, okay. So this sister, this woman who took this kind of, you know, criticism for 8 years and still came out shining like a bright light, there's a lot to be said for that. There's a whole lot to be said for that.
A lot to be said for that.
Yes.
But this is crazy. How can you call her a feminist nightmare talking about she didn't use her position in education to advocate for women's issues when one of the big things that she did was advocate for women's issues?
Well, I think if we put that statement under a political microscope, she probably meant it wasn't additionally beneficial for white women or privileged women. At least that's the vibe that I got from that.
You know that was one of the things. Now, Melissa Harris-Perry, who was on MSNBC at the time, she came to the First Lady's defense, and she asked Cottle, who she had on the show one day, about that statement and looked at her and said, are you serious with that statement? And, of course, the backtracking began.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I was misunderstood or, you know, I misspoke or that's
See,
not what
how
I
did
meant.
You know it was going to come out like that?
That's a part of the course. If you're going to backpedal, you have to put all those statements in. But Mrs. Obama is a force. She is a force, and people couldn't handle that.
No, they couldn't. And the one thing you could honestly say about her was that she believed in women's rights 100%. There was no ifs, ands, and buts.
Absolutely.
None.
You know, they had to try to attack her on things like that because they could not attack her on her intelligence. They could not attack her on her educational, you know, achievements. So they had to try to go at her some other way, and none of it stuck because none of it was true that they were throwing at her. So
exactly. They couldn't. And, you know, even after her and President Obama left the White House, they are still moving forward. They have a deal. They both have their own deal with Netflix.
Yeah.
And they both have released shows of their own, which are doing very well. As you know, former First Lady Obama wrote a book.
Yes. Yes, and a bestseller.
Bestseller. And if I'm not mistaken, the title is it Being Michelle Obama?
I believe so. It's either Being Michelle Obama or Being Me. It's something like that. I've only read excerpts. I haven't read the whole book. So.
But I know that it became a bestseller.
Mm-hmm. It was.
And my thing is, if you wasn't on point like she was, how did your book become a bestseller?
Exactly. You know, I think it's important for people to understand that if you are going to marry somebody that is going to be political in the modern era, you need to have a mate, a spouse that is going to be able to hold up their part of the sky. And I think that Michelle Obama is a perfect example of that. She was no slouch on any level.
No.
And she was able to carry off the duties of the First Lady. You know, sometimes she made it look so easy that people forget about all the pressure that she went through. But she's just a class act. And people, you know, that couldn't handle it, it just drove them crazy. They could not handle it.
you know, and one of the things was, you know, she was under intense pressure, especially during campaign times. You know, one of the things was, you know, there were a lot of people who felt like, you know, she sometimes may have gotten intense when she was out event. It wasn't that she was tense, but it was that she spoke purposely.
Yes.
You know, she spoke purposely, and she spoke honestly.
Yes.
And a lot of,
you know, Michelle was relatable to a lot of people, and that is why she was so effective on the campaign trail. I mean, when they published articles or did, you know, blurbs on the news about her shopping at Target and, you know, looking for bargains for her kids, I mean, that's what every American woman does.
Man.
You know, you go out shopping for your kids. And she did that. And she was very relatable on so many levels. And people could understand that. I mean, her going to Old Navy, you know, to Target, to places that, you know, regular people go and buy things, wearing an outfit more than once or twice. I mean, these are things that the American public can relate to. And Michelle Obama
did
that.
And during that time frame, Old Navy, Target, Forever 21, all these places, their stocks went out the roof. Why? The First Lady was shopping there.
That's right. That is so, you know, so, hey, that's a boon to the American economy right there. You're welcome, America.
Exactly.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm.
Now, last but not least, Rosalynn Carter.
All right, now.
Rosalynn Carter, who was the First Lady from 77 to 81, now, before Rosalynn came into the White House, she was a writer and an activist.
Mm.
And, of course, she was the wife of President Jimmy Carter. And she was a staunch advocate of mental health even before she came to the White House. Mm. Mrs. Carter was born and raised in Plains, Georgia, where she graduated from high school there as a salutatorian. She attended Georgia Southwestern College, graduating in 1946, when she married Jimmy Carter that same year. She helped her husband win the governorship of Georgia in 1970 and focused her attention on mental health when she was that state's first lady.
Wow.
When Governor Carter decided to run for the presidency in 76, she actively campaigned for him and helped him defeat everybody's favorite Republican president at the time, Gerald Ford. Good old Gerald.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The man,
you know,
who was known to stumble. The man who was known to stumble.
Yes, he was. He, God bless his heart, he was one clumsy dude.
Yeah, he was.
And I think one of the things that actually didn't help Gerald was the fact that he pardoned Tricky Dick. He pardoned Dick Nixon, who had already declared that he wasn't a crook, but everybody knows he was a crook.
Yes, and politically, yeah, I agree. That was the nail in the coffin for Ford. But not surprisingly, he stayed in lockstep with the Republicans who wanted that to happen.
Yes. Yes, indeed. So Mrs. Carter declared that she had no intentions of being a traditional first lady, and she supported her husband's public policies as well as his social and personal life. So in order to remain fully informed, she sat in on many cabinet meetings at the invitation of the president. She also represented the president in meetings with domestic and foreign leaders. Most notably, she served as an envoy to Latin America in 1977.
Wow.
Yes. She was cited as an equal partner by her husband, the president. And, you know, like you just said, people in politics need someone with them that's in lockstep with them, that can hold up their end of the deal.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's funny. I'm sure that you've heard the story that Jimmy Carter actually met Rosalynn several hours after she was born, that she was the girl next door, and that I believe it was Jimmy Carter's mom or grandma that was the midwife for Rosalynn, and he was allowed to come in and look at her as an infant. And he told his mom, he said, "I'm going to marry her one day." And
yeah,
it came to pass.
Yeah, it came to pass.
Yeah. Just a cute little, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Nugget. But, yeah, she was literally the girl next door.
She literally was the girl next door. You know, and after leaving the White House in 81, Mrs. Carter continued to advocate for mental health and several other causes, and she wrote several more books. Her and her husband, the former president, contribute to the expansion of the nonprofit organization Habitat for Humanity.
Yes, I'm so glad you talked about this. So they have been involved up to this day, except for President Carter's failing health. So, yes,
exactly.
Please.
And they, yes, you know, Habitat for Humanity was around, but it wasn't that well known. And then when the Carters got involved, more people start taking notice.
That's right.
More people start coming to help out. More celebrities got involved. And it just wasn't about celebrities. But now everyday people start looking at the Carters going, well,
right,
if they can and they're close to their 90s, I can.
Exactly.
And let's just be honest. Up until, like you said, President Carter's health started to fail him, they're in their early 90s, and they were still out there building houses.
Yes, absolutely.
That's saying a great deal.
That's saying a whole lot. They weren't just talking about it, but they were being about it. I think it's wonderful that, you know, really good Christian kind of folks.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, President Carter has some stumbling blocks, you know, during his administration. One was the hostage crisis.
Absolutely.
But he also had some big time deals. The peace accord at Camp David.
That was huge.
You know,
yeah.
And I know people always want to bring up our hostages losing their lives. And the thing about that was there were some things on that mission that just went wrong that we had no control over. You can't control equipment failures. You can't control sandstorms. So
no,
there were some things out of whack. But
As a first lady,
Rosalynn Carter. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was saying, as a first lady, Rosalynn Carter really did step up to the plate, and her standing up about mental health says a lot, because as you and I both know, a lot of people will mumble about mental health, but they won't say too much about it. But not only did she take a stand as first lady, she took a stand as the first lady of Georgia when she was the governor there over mental health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the last taboos to talk about in an American society.
And I think that's something that we as a nation need to get more into. Maybe we can head off some of the things that have been happening. I always notice when there's a mass shooting, they never want to address the gun part of it. The first thing out their mouth is, well, maybe it's a mental issue. Okay, well, if it's a mental issue, why are we not discussing mental health like we should? Why are we not talking about that like we should?
Exactly, and why isn't it being funded, you know, like it should be. I know you and I both have worked in social services, and I know for a fact that when I was doing social work, if the county was cutting a budget, social mental health services was one of the first things to go.
Always the first to go.
System that, yes.
Yes, always the first to go. And that's, for some reason, that's always been. And that's something that we have got to get away from. It's time for us to start putting our money into mental health so that we can start taking care of people.
That's right. Absolutely. And it needs to be, you know, for across the board, we need to try to filter out the racism that goes along with that and everything else when we approach it, because there's even issues with health care and racism. So, but absolutely, mental health is something that Americans need to embrace and fund. Fully fund. So I'm
you are
glad
absolutely
to hear
correct about that.
I'm glad to hear she was part of that.
Yes, she was. Well, my sister, I have covered all my folks, and you've covered all your folks, and you know, I think we did some honor to this tonight.
I think so. You know, and it's important that people understand that. You know, these women contributed to history and to making things better in our country. So I'm glad we were able, you know, you really did a good job choosing this subject for this month, and I was happy to be a part of it.
And I definitely appreciate you for doing that. And I just want to say to those out there who may be listening or may listen to the show later on, we appreciate you. We thank you for dipping in to our sound bites. You know, we may not say that often enough, but trust and believe. I appreciate everyone who will listen from time to time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, well, with that being said, I'm going to do my sign off the way I always do it. We want y'all to stay black. Until we get back with you, take good care of yourself.
Yes, indeed. And as I always say, each one, reach one, teach one. Those of you proficient with your arms, take your folks to the range. Get them trained up. Get them licensed. Start a neighborhood watch. Start a cop watch. Watch the people who are watching us. Take care of one another. And if you didn't learn anything else tonight, know this. Strong women will always make this country better. Support those that you know in your family, in your neighborhood, in your government. Those of you who need to get registered to vote, stop sitting on your hands. Get yourself registered. And I've always said, I don't care who you vote for. I care about you being registered to vote. Exercise your right to use the power that many folks died so that you can have. All right, everybody, keep each other safe. Take care of one another. And until next time, we'll holler.